This is episode 127 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Dementia Care and Residence Rights. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith. Good day.
Good day, I guess, to you too, Will. I think that I have an understanding as to why you're speaking that way, but right. Why don't you, what gives?
Well, because our guest today is all the way on the other side of the world in Australia.
Southern Hemisphere, where the toilet water.
That's not true.
What do you mean it's not true? It's absolutely true. Where the water is counterclockwise.
Is it like the Coriolis effect? Or whatever it is, I don't believe that it's true.
Oh, that's like the thing. There was not a Shaquille O'Neal movie from the 90s where he was a genie.
Shazam.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Sinbad.
Or yeah. Sinbad didn't have the movie.
Right.
Something like that where it's that. What is the effect you're talking about?
I was talking about, I think there's an effect of the what does the water like that, but I don't think that it actually does that. You're talking about is the Berenstain or the Berenstain bears, and I can't remember what that's called.
There's some type of effect. We really are doing a Rob's mom at this moment,
yeah,
where we're going off into something. We're saying words that don't mean anything. But
yeah.
I took whatever you said to mean the
understood
effect of misunderstanding of something, but that's held by the entire society.
Right.
Perhaps we should edit this whole thing out.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think we should keep this at this point.
We'll keep it at this
point. But we will find out at some point whether or not I am right or whether or not Rob is right. I say that the water does not go the opposite direction, that it's the same thing.
And I say that it does go in opposite directions, okay, depending on what you are in the where you are in the hemisphere. But at any rate, we're going to be talking in this episode about residence right, dementia care, and the sexual rights of residents of long-term care facilities, mm-hmm, across the world. But we're not doing that by ourselves. As Will mentioned, we are doing that with the help of our guest today, who hails from Australia. Will, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Dr. Rhonda Ney?
So Dr. Ney is a professor emeritus at La Trobe University, Melbourne. She practiced, researched, educated, and informed professional government policies in nursing and aged care for over 40 years. Her passion is aged and dementia care. She is a registered nurse, a member of Alzheimer's Australia, distinguished fellow of both the Australian Association of Gerontology and the Australian College of Nurses and Midwives. She has numerous publications and books she co-edited with Sally Garrett on care of older people, which twice won the AAG Award for best publication in the field of aging. And she was a frequent invited keynote speaker, workshop presenter, and consultant in nursing homes. Before semi-retirement in 2013, she was professor of interdisciplinary aged care and director of the Australian Institute for Primary Care and Aging. She has developed and taught programs at all levels, from in-service to PhD. She led the development of a Bachelor of Aged Care, which was taught in Japan. So we are speaking with somebody who has decades of experience, and we are very happy to have her on the air today.
Rhonda, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's lovely to be on the show.
Fantastic. And you know, we've been international for a while now. We actually had another Australian on the show probably last year. Episode 72 is Kate Swafer of the Dementia Alliance International.
So you're
Do you know Kate?
Kate's a good friend. I know Kate very well. She's a wonderful woman.
She is. How's she doing?
She's doing really well. Very busy and forever all over the world. So, yeah, she's been a magnificent advocate.
Yeah, she has. She has an amazing story, too. She's truly a remarkable individual.
Rhonda, we wanted to have you on the show. We saw a couple of articles that you had written on residents' rights, on the rights of residents of nursing homes that are living with dementia, and also the sexual rights of residents and long-term care. So we wanted to kind of hit the high notes of those things. So kind of to start us off, and again, to refresh, our audience is made up mostly of family members who have a loved one in a nursing home that, you know, they're just kind of looking for some basic information they can use to arm themselves in the protection of their loved ones and just to be more informed in general. So if we can take it from there, what is dementia, and what are kind of some of the symptoms of dementia, and how are, you know, how are we caring for individuals with dementia in the nursing home and long-term care setting?
I think that it's really important for people to understand that dementia comes from damage to the brain, traumatized, and it's really important that they understand that just like cancer is a disease of the body, so too dementia comes from diseases of the brain. And also, I think differentiating dementia from, for example, Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
There are over 100 causes of dementia, and Alzheimer's is, of course, the most well-known and the most common, but we also have dementia, vascular dementia, dementia from syphilis, younger onset dementia. There are just, if you go onto Google, there are literally over 100 conditions that can cause dementia. And what dementia, how it presents, is, again, it varies depending on which part of the brain is affected. And so we associate it, I guess, most with memory loss.
Right.
And that is commonly a initial symptom. But there are many, many others. Difficulty with language, which I'm sure Kate Swaffer spoke about. Difficulties with finding your way, getting lost, managing your emotions, managing finances. So there are many, many symptoms, depending on, as I say, which part of the brain is actually affected.
Right. That makes sense. So in terms of caring for individuals in nursing homes, what are some of the challenges in the general care and treatment of a resident of a nursing home that has is suffering the symptoms of dementia versus an individual that is not?
I think that the two biggest challenges, one is the environment, because generally the environments are not set up for people with dementia, and I can say a bit more about that. And the other is staff practices, because very often the staff are not sufficiently educated about working with someone with dementia. And so they can trigger the so-called challenging behaviours. The challenge is the staff, not the person with dementia. So I think if we could get the environment right to maximise the independence of the person with dementia, and we could get the staff skill set right, a lot of the issues would go away.
Yeah. When you say
having said that,
yeah.
Obviously, sorry.
No, I was going to say, Rhonda, you might actually be getting into it right now, and I jumped the gun on this, but when you say environment, what are some of the factors of the environment that would quote unquote trigger an individual that has dementia?
Well, one of the issues for people with dementia is sensitivity to sound and light. And so if you have a very busy nursing home and you have very loud staff, people make sense of the noise, what they're seeing. And so, like all of us, if we get frustrated, then you will see that coming out, you know, often as anger or so-called aggression. But it's really about, you know, how do we organise the home so that we can to have optimum stimulation rather than too much or too little. The other is about making it easier for people to make sense of their environment. And so some of the homes, for example, make sure that they have lots of things around the person related to their own home, their own history, making sure that if you don't want people to go out a door, for example, you can camouflage it so that it looks like a wall, and a door you want them to go into, for example, a toilet, will be colourful, or, you know, their own room can have things that attract them to it because it reminds them of their own history. Having homely smells, so, you know, having food cooked on site and enabling people with dementia as far as possible to be involved in that. So, you know, the smells of scones cooking or something like that can be very calming. The music. A lot of nursing homes you go into and they have the television blaring all day long. They have the radio running on a station the staff like, rather than individualising music. They're getting into MP3 music now where the music that individual likes is put on there for that person, and they can then manage that rather than having a lot of loud, inappropriate sounds that don't make sense to them.
Right. And Rhonda, we've talked about this one particular example. I just think that it's an interesting example of when a nursing home gets it right in terms of dementia care. But there, we were speaking to a guest on a previous episode, and they had brought up the example of an individual resident. She was constantly going through other people's rooms, wandering into other people's rooms and going through their drawers. And then either a family member or a staff member doing an inventory of the person's personal history realized that the individual resident was a librarian for 30 or 40 years. And so, you know, what was going on in their mind was a mission to file the
Dewey Decimal
the file cards of the library. So the staff, the intervention was to provide that resident with, you know, 300 or 400 index cards and a little drawer. And the resident, you know, stopped wandering and just manipulated the cards in the drawer. You know, when that was kind of her trigger to wander was not having things to organize.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think too often what we try to do is to stop the behavior, which just increases frustration, rather than looking at the history of what that person used to do and then trying to replicate that as they've done here with the librarian. And there are loads of good examples like that where once you work out why the person's doing what they're doing, then an intervention is easy. I don't know if you've ever watched House series on TV, but I used to use that as an example of the way in which we should be trying to understand what the person with dementia is going through. So, you know, having the whiteboard, having as many people who know that person as possible, and really going through, you know, we tend to do some of the medical stuff quite well, but the social history, the psychological history, the things that matter to that person, we don't do so well. We tend to tick and flick and say, yes, we've done a history, rather than really sitting down and saying, like a detective, you know, what are all the things that we can bring together here to create a care environment that is appropriate for this individual rather than for the staff. The history, of course, of nursing homes is very much based on the hospital model and what's good for staff. And we're getting better at it, but God, we've got a long, long way to go before we get it right.
Yeah, it seems too often, at least here in the States, I was in a nursing home the other day that did not separate those that had Alzheimer's or memory issues from others. And people were coming over the intercom every 10 minutes that it was constant noise. And I was actually investigating an issue of chemical restraints, which is no surprise.
Oh, yep.
And it's just, we're not there yet, but I think we're certainly a lot farther than we used to be. at least in the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest era.
Yeah, and I really want to piggyback on your point about using the personal history and kind of approaching it like House, where I feel like I don't know how you would call it, the soft characteristics of somebody, not necessarily their, you know, maybe the symptoms of diabetes or whatever their diagnosis are from a health standpoint that you would, you know, notate and provide medications for, but those soft characteristics, what do? Do they respond well to swing music or are they into Motown music? Mm-hmm. These type of things would have a lot of times have a stronger impact on their overall care than, well, what dosage of, you know, whatever drug should they be provided? Although I think that, as you pointed out, it's much easier for the staff to give the individual more drugs to make them lethargic than figure out if it's Motown or swing music.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, as you would know, but it's intriguing that staff will say that they're using restraint to protect the patient, whereas, in fact, there is an enormous amount of evidence to show that restraint problems and death than non-restraint. The other thing I was going to say, talking about the environment, is the outside environment. I think very often people with dementia are locked in so they can't wander, mm-hmm. and so they don't get enough vitamin D. Watering the garden is a great relaxing thing to do, and, you know, being able to potter in the garden. And there are just so many things, I think, that we can do around the environment, around the way in which staff interact with them, the social environment. You know, are we giving them a plastic cup at dinner time, or, you know, have we given them a wine glass? There are just so many things. People take away my champagne when I get dementia, I'll scream all day.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Rhonda, can you kind of talk about the concept of residence rights? When we say residence rights in a long-term care setting, what in general does that mean?
Look, this has been a passion of mine since, I think, back in the 80s. And nursing homes then were very much, who was that fellow who wrote the brilliant book on institutions? It'll come to me later. But I think that the rights of the resident are no different to your rights or my rights. And this is what we forget, that staff look at it as, you know, we're here to look after you and you will do what I... even the language, you look at the language, compliance and orders and cases, none of that is person-centred. It's very much, I'm the boss and you will do what I say. Whereas the resident is in there and the staff are to provide a service to them. And so every right a human being has in our society, they should also have when they're in care. We're not there as their moral guardians. We're not there. We are there to protect them to some extent, but we've got to think long and hard about the dignity of risk. We all take risks. We admire people who take risks. And just because you are in a nursing home doesn't mean to say you shouldn't be allowed to take risks. So it's, how can I support you to take the risks you want to? There's a guy over here who has done some amazing work, and, you know, he's even taken a resident down to jump out of a helicopter, luckily with a parachute.
Right.
But... Yep, go on.
Oh, I was just laughing. Yeah. That was my laugh. Sometimes it sounds weird, but I was laughing at your anecdote.
All right. I think residents, first and foremost, want to have the right to be heard, and Kate will have talked about nothing about us without us. It is really important that we listen to the person with dementia, and often people will say, well, you know, they can't talk, they're post-verbal. And I just refer them to Mr. Bean, because Mr. Bean doesn't have to say a word, but right. He can communicate everything he wants to. And people with dementia, what we've got to do is to become much better at reading their nonverbal language, and I can never remember, but I think something like 70% of our communication is nonverbal anyway. Mm-hmm. And so we make way too much of the fact that the person can't use the language verbally, rather than becoming experts in saying, what is this person telling me nonverbally? And people with dementia, especially in the later stages, tend to be very, very good at telling you if they're not happy. And so, you know, by watching their facial expression, watching their body language, watching what interests them, then we can work out what it is they want and support that person's right to be as fully themselves as they can be.
That's right. And I think you...
The other thing I should...
Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up the other thing that is so often neglected and really important and often a trigger is pain. I've even had doctors say to me, people with dementia don't get pain. And if you're in pain or you're too hot, too cold, and you can't alter that environment, you perhaps don't have the words to explain it, and nobody's doing anything about it, then you're going to get behaviours, because that's communication.
Mm-hmm. And I really like the way that you frame it as far as the ability to take risks, because I am having worked in this industry. I was a CNA in nursing homes for a long time. And one of the things that would always bother me is people who would come in and say things like, well, mama can't have this, well, mama can't have that, or mama's not allowed to smoke. Like, this woman is 85 years old. What are you trying to do? Like, if there's ever a time in her life for her to take risks, now's the time. Are you worried she's not going to make it to 87? It's absurd.
Yeah, I think that, each individual state regulates their nursing homes in their own particular way, and the federal government, at least in the United States, does as well. And we have codified a lot of core rights that we have that we don't lose when we are admitted into a nursing home. And, and what you said is extremely important, because I mean, that's really what it is. There's a great Supreme Court case that has to do with speech and students.
Yeah.
And it's the same concept. And the great quote from that case is that you don't shed your constitutional rights at the schoolhouse gate. You don't shed your rights as a human being when you're admitted into a nursing home.
No, let them party, let them smoke, let them drink, let them, you know, and I think we're about to get into this one too, let them have sex. I mean, these are human.
Absolutely.
These are human beings who have, if anything, earned everything that they have access to. So that's let them be human.
Yeah. Yep. And Rhonda, that was a good segue, Will. Excellent segue. Can you kind of talk to us about that? Where do residents' rights intersect with consenting adults that are just happen to be nursing home residents have to engage in sexual activity?
I believe that residents, I often ask large groups of people whether they seek their children's consent before they have sex, and they all laugh. And yet so many families think they have the right to tell their parents or to tell the staff, oh no, mum can't do that. And if they come upon, something happening, then they will very, very often blame the man, whereas, in fact, it was often the woman that said, come on, let's go. Mm-hmm. I think that as long as both those people are indicating that they're happy with what they're doing, then they should be supported, and the family should... I think you've got to start right at the point of admission, and families need to be counselled and to understand that in this place we support the residents' rights, and that includes sexual rights. We talk about whether they've had their bowels open and whether they're incontinent, etc., but we seem to draw the line at talking about sex and death, and they're very important. There's been a tremendous amount of research done on how good sex is for you. So if you're not having it, get out there and do it.
Right.
It's good for pain. It's good for depression. It's good, you know, it's a great exercise. It's good for self-esteem. And if ever there was a time when we need and also touch is so important. And often older people don't get any mm-hmm. of that personal touch. They only get the instrumental touch that says, wash your face, you know. So I think that these sexual rights are right up there for me and that we've got to support them. And, you know, the dividing line between when two people are enjoying each other versus one person's attacking the other is very easy to see. It's not a great mystery.
There was actually recently an article where this young girl asked this resident what she wanted most, and she just said hugs. And it was, and she went around hugging the different residents, which, you know, hugging in contact releases oxytocin, which is very important chemical in our brains. Even if it's non-sexual, just human contact, like you're saying. I mean, these are not lab rats that you just keep.
Social beings.
Yeah, these are human social beings.
Yeah, and I think that's interesting that sexual activity, human contact, emotional support from other people in your community is important. Yet, in any particular care plan, any particular care plan meeting, that concept probably comes up less than 1% of the time.
Well, it's like what she said is that this needs to be something that's dealt with on the front end. That when you bring your mom here, they need to say, listen, in conjunction with the healthcare staff, we'll come up with a care plan, but your mother or your father is, you know, assuming they have their cognitive consent ability, they have the ability and the rights to make their own decisions.
Birds and bees.
So you're not going to come in here and say, well, we don't want mama seeing that guy anymore. All right.
But they also separate married people. You know, it's not just new relationships. I am regularly contacted by people who say, you know, they've split up mum and dad.
Yeah.
And that's a problem too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was... go ahead.
We developed a sexual rights policy in Victoria, and it was checked out by the legal folks, etc. But I think what it did was also to provide a vehicle for that conversation up front to say, you know, this is what drives our facility. And I think that, you know, that the notion of consent and assent is extremely important when you're talking about dementia.
Yeah.
But I would argue that if you have two people who, well, even if it's not sex, if someone wants to take a risk and the family's saying, no, they can't, if that family member has power of attorney, I still think the staff should be prepared to take that further if they don't think it's in the resident's rights. So, you know, to the tribunal or the rights council or whatever the state has, in order to maximise the rights of the resident.
Well, and unfortunately, it's way easier to kowtow to the family than it is to the resident, because the family is a lot more vocal.
Or the concept of the rights of that resident.
Yeah, or the concept of the rights of that resident. Yeah, exactly.
Rhonda, in the last minute or so that we have, can you tell us a little bit about how you came into this arena? Like, what was it that made you come into this area?
I first went into it because hospitals wouldn't employ mothers with babies and nursing homes did.
Wow.
And
what was the reasoning behind that?
And I...
A long time ago, I guess.
Well, it wasn't so much they wouldn't employ, it was that they wouldn't give shifts that would accommodate, you know, that you had to work a shift at the hospital. But I think what struck me was the absolute lack of rights Mm-hmm. And these days we'd call it downright abuse. And so I went on a lifelong mission, I think, to try and do something about that. And one of the things that I probably haven't mentioned explicitly that I think is absolutely at the forefront of that is connection. And even right up to the very last stages of dementia, you can connect with that person. They can feel the empathy. They look in your eyes and they know whether you are seeing them as a fully human being or whether you're seeing them as a job to be done. Yeah. And so I suppose the big thing in, you know, a million different ways is getting people to see the person mm-hmm. rather than the disease and to interact with that person. And it doesn't take any more time. It's about how you do something. It's not another task to add at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It's about that human contact and expressing to that person, you know, you are as fully human as I am, and I respect you.
Very well said. Very well said. Well, Rhonda, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, sharing your history with us, and educating our audience. I know that they're going to greatly appreciate it, and that we appreciate it very much. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been fun.
A lot of territory that we don't usually handle on this episode, the sexual activity stuff. I think we've maybe touched on that maybe just a few times. Well, not outside of like assault.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about consensual.
Yeah.
Sexual relations.
Yeah, of course, everything, you know, consent is built in there.
Yeah.
But one of the things that used to make me so angry is they would, you know, a doctor's job, I guess, is, hey, listen, it is the healthiest for this person to, because they're diabetic, to eat these foods. And the nursing staff, understandably so, and the family would say, well, this is the rule now. Mom can't have McDonald's, even though she loves it. She can't have cake, even though she loves it.
Right.
And she would ask for stuff like that, or the resident would ask for stuff, and they would go, no, you can't have that. Like, what do you mean you can't have that?
Yeah.
You absolutely, so, because I'm looking at this, and I don't want to get too angry here, but I'm looking at this nurse who's clearly not in the best shape of his or her life and thinking, like, you clearly make some bad decisions when you leave work. And you're telling this resident who's, I mean, unless you're Methuselah, you don't have but a couple of years left here on this earth, you know.
And they've made it. It's yet to see whether or not you've made it.
Right.
With your
right.
dietary decisions.
Yeah. So let them smoke, let them drink, let them eat, let them have sex. Because, you know, at the end of the day, not only are we all going to pass away into the great oblivion beyond, but these people are closer to it than we are.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting what you said about how, like, you know, how many of us ask our children for permission to have sex.
Oh, absolutely.
And speaking of that, speaking of parents, Sunday is National Parents Day.
National Parents Day.
July 28th. Yeah. So call your parents if they're still around. If not, call somebody else's parents.
Mm-hmm.
Thank them.
We only have two parents between us.
Between us, we have two parents left.
Yeah.
Well, don't speak so soon because this episode is recorded months ahead of time. Just kidding, moms.
Just kidding, moms.
Another housekeeping matter. I think I mentioned this at the top of the previous episode, but you may or may not have noticed that we have gone to an every other week schedule for the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. So rather than every Monday morning, it will be every other Monday morning you can catch a new episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. And with that housekeeping matter out of the way, that will conclude this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can catch all the episodes, past and present, on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, on YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Yeah. So iTunes, Spotify, and I would add, you can catch all the episodes past, present, and future.
What did I say?
You said past and present.
Okay. But you so could you're catch... saying that they can get future episodes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Literally, you know. Yeah. I see. But not future to the date in which they're listening to this. Like, how are they going to go into the future to get the episodes?
Well, you're constantly moving into the future.
I see.
So it's a matter of semantics.
So that's Steve Miller?
Yes.
Steve Miller. All right. Steve Miller. All right. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.